Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
What's good, Internet? You're listening to episode 121 of the Syrupcast. The Syrupcast, for those who don't know, is a podcast devoted to the week that was in Canadian tech and telecom news. Today is May 18th, the day after Google I.O. And it just so happens that most of today we'll be talking about Google I.O. I'm joined this week by young Bradley. How are you, sir?
Pretty good, thank you.
Welcome back to the podcast.
Thank you for having
round
me.
Round two. Back and better than ever.
That, of course, is the voice of Rosegold Bihar.
Hello.
How are you?
I am, as always, fantastic.
And last, but certainly not least, Old Reliable.
I'm good. How are you, Igor?
Good. I can't see you due to the seating arrangement.
I'm not actually here. I'm recording from another planet or something.
Yes,
I feel like you're recording from BlackBerry Central, or sorry, BlackBerry Central Waterloo, because today is Key One launch day / pre-order day.
Or from inside a Nintendo Switch.
That, of course. So let's just jump right into it. Google I.O., what did everyone think?
I think it was probably a bit more interesting than last year. Mm-hmm. At least there were more announcements, even if they were very small. Mm-hmm. And thank goodness we did not see another chat app.
Yeah, so the two big ones for, I guess, Canadian, and you guys can, if I forget something... Obviously, Google Home coming to Canada, and also Android Pay coming to Canada. Did I miss anything, Pat?
I think those are the two big ones in the context of Canada. But did they actually make the Android Pay coming to Canada announcement during the keynote?
It was revealed during one of the subsequent developer presentations. Yeah, good to clarify.
But I would say those are the two biggest things. I mean, for me, the announcement that I was most hyped about was Google Home. I've been waiting for it to come to Canada for a while. Mm-hmm. We don't have any IoT voice activated assistants that are officially available here. Echo hasn't come yet, so mm-hmm. It's cool to see Google to be the first company to care about Canada.
Mm-hmm. I mean, there were some other announcements that people didn't care about as much, but that were kind of cool to my mind, like a Google Daydream standalone headset. Which obviously means you don't have to use a phone or a PC to have it work. Mm-hmm. I know you're kind of into VR. Brad, what did you think of that?
That was a big one for me because obviously one of the big challenges with VR is the technical limitations with it, in the sense that you need platforms, like you said, to work off of, like a higher-end PC, or even in the case of PSVR, you need about a $400 PlayStation 4. So I think the idea that Google's working with these companies to do separate ones that are standalone, from that don't need to be tethered to these platforms, is a good thing.
I agree with Brad too. I mean, I'm somewhat into VR still as well, not as much as I used to be. Mm-hmm. But I think that this is probably the right move for Daydream, because I think to some extent this is Google admitting that their initial concept for Daydream maybe didn't pan out exactly how they wanted. Like Rose and I have talked about this a bunch of times. There's very few Daydream certified smartphones.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Offhand, like there's the Axon 5, correct?
Axon 7.
Axon 7.
Yeah.
And then there is
the Moto Z.
Or as I like to say, Moto Z.
Moto Z, of course. To keep it Canadian. And then there's the Pixel and the Pixel XL. Right. And then they announced, Google announced during I.O. that the S8, as well as the S8 Plus, and whatever LG's next phone is
probably
going to be,
the V30.
The V30, yeah, will also be Daydream certified. But that's not a lot of devices, right? And those are very high-end devices. Maybe we'll see more Daydream certified phones in the future, but I think Google kind of realizes that maybe this VR, AR headset, not AR, VR headset powered by a phone thing isn't the way to get more of these devices in people's homes.
It just seemed like the support wasn't there at all for the Daydream platform. Like, that seems to me to be the most conceivable reason for why it wasn't working, because we saw phones with the correct specifications that just weren't there yet. So perhaps there was some hesitation on the point of the actual OEMs to join Daydream.
Like the G6? Like, yeah. Why is that not Daydream certified?
Well, why do you choose, Brad and Pat, why do you suspect that was? Why did we not see more phones get Daydream certified?
I don't really know. I mean, I think Daydream is a good platform. It's probably the best low-end VR platform. I think for some companies, VR is just not a priority. They know that it's not going to help them ship phones, so they concentrated on other features that are more important to them and more important to consumers right now. I still think VR is going to be a big thing, but it's not like we're talking like 5-10 years from now, right? It's not something that's going to suddenly explode and help you ship 10 more million phones.
That's a really good point. I think, you know, OEMs always say over and over again, like, what we're seeing is that people still want a better camera. So the camera is the focus, or battery life is the focus. But VR is such an emerging technology. It's not quite there yet. I mean, I guess you kind of can go back to the idea of like, well, you know, it will be eventually, and it'll be huge, and you want to make sure your phone is future-proofed. Because maybe consumers don't know what they want.
By then, we'll have the Galaxy S10.
That's exactly.
Or 11 or 12, right?
Yes, until then, it could be a good idea to just have to break it out and be standalone and earn the money that you can from the VR community and not have to worry about integrating into phones or looking for those partnerships.
I think the key with these standalone headsets, building off of what Rose said and what Brad was saying too, is price. Like, I think if these come in and they're 300 or 400, probably less would be preferable. But if they hit that price range, then it's quite possible that people might pick them up and give VR a try. I think having a headset that is powered by either a PC or a PS4 or even just a phone adds this barrier to entry that a lot of VR manufacturers maybe didn't foresee. And that this may get rid of that. I really do think that standalone headsets are the key to VR's future and to it actually becoming this thing that people think it might be.
So slightly shifting gears, announcement I really found interesting was that, you know, last week we talked a lot about Amazon Show and all the other assistants. And this week at I/O, Google kind of had a really interesting response to that, which was, why create another like assistant with a screen when you have so many screens in your life already, right? Like, use the screen, the ubiquitous screens that are, you know, that's in your pocket or the one that is in your living room. What did you guys take on that? Because I think that was kind of one of the more interesting announcements that to come out yesterday.
Yeah, I think Google Assistant had a big I/O yesterday, and I think a lot of the announcements sort of led me to believe that it's sort of poised better than anybody else to dominate the AI space. In particular, there was the announcement that Actions will now work for both Android and iOS phones as well. So developers who are developing an action, or as you might call it with an Amazon Alexa skill, that sort of thing, for the home can also rest assured that it will work through mobile as well. And who wouldn't want to develop for that? I'm quite sure that we'll see the library of Google Actions coming to meet Amazon Alexa very soon, maybe even within the year.
So, Brad, what do you take of Assistant coming to the iPhone?
I think that's a good decision. They didn't spend too much time talking about it, which I think was good.
Like most things.
It was good to kind of just get that out there, mention it. Of course, it won't be as robust as like what Siri has to offer, but I think it's a nice alternative to have on iPhone, you know, give more options.
Do you mean I won't be able to say, Siri, please launch Google Assistant? Is that what you're telling me, Brad?
I mean, it's sort of ridiculous how lame it's going to be on the iPhone in a way. And I'm sure that's the only reason that Apple sort of allowed it to be, is because it's not going to be useful. There's no deep integrations with the phone, so you can't even say, you know, hey, Google Assistant, set me alarm for this and that kind of stuff that is what makes the Google Assistant handy on, say, a Pixel. So it's quite limited.
It's still cool that it's there. I mean, I didn't expect that to happen. I didn't expect Apple to allow an app like that on their platform. So it's nice to see the company being like a little more open with helping their competitors, sort of, but not really.
Yeah.
So, Pat, another thing that Google revealed was the VPS, visual positioning service. And that, I think, struck me as one of their more interesting like moonshots. What was your take on that?
I think it's a cool idea. It's one of those things that I need to sort of see in person and see how it's actually going to work before I'm on board with it. But it was definitely one of the more interesting announcements. Is it going to work with the standalone headsets? Was that part of...
No, it works with the Tango phones, which was going to lead into another question.
Oh, okay.
So the Tango phones, if you haven't been following along, and you know, I don't blame you because there's not been a lot happening there. The Tango phones, it's kind of an augmented reality smartphone. It has three phones. There's a depth sensing, there's a regular camera, and then there's... I forget what the third camera does. You'll have to excuse me. But together, they work together to, you know, let the camera or the phone interact with actual 3D space. So what this does is Google kind of compared it to GPS, except inside. And basically, you can point your camera in, let's say, a department store or museum, and Google will overlay kind of a mask, an augmented reality mask that directs you to points of interest. So, we'll have to see where Tango goes. I mean, Rose, did you get a sense that we're going to start seeing more activity there?
I think that AR is an incredibly ripe area for innovation, and I think we will see a lot more there. So far, you know, the Lenovo's first Tango phone said it was coming to Canada, didn't make it to Canada.
Didn't it come and then they removed it?
Exactly. Actually, yeah. I think few people did get it in Canada and then they removed it.
That's awesome.
And we'll have to see about the Asus, was it Zenfone AR, right?
Yeah, and that was actually announced before this event.
Right.
And it just flew under everyone's radar.
But I do think the AR space is incredibly rich and will be very intriguing for people to follow. My opinion is always that AR will probably merge with VR or take over VR in terms of what will be the leading dominant technology there. In terms
mixed
of
reality.
Microsoft wants to call it mixed reality.
For me, going on to the VPS, as someone who's worked in retail many years, just the thinking of the practical applications of it, kind of like what they're saying, it'll lead you to the door, like Google Maps or whatever will lead you to the door, and then the VPS will bring you to exactly where you want to go. So just thinking of all the times I've seen customers, you know, where do I find this or whatever, they don't have to wait for an associate to help them. The VPS, in theory anyways, could direct them exactly to where they need to go. So from the retail space and other stores like that, I think that's a really interesting and exciting idea that could really help.
Brad, you know customers. They're so annoying. They're just going to come up to you anyway and be like, hey, this VPS thing isn't working. You're from Best Buy. You know how to work this, don't you?
How do I use my Tango phone?
Moving to bigger picture, what was kind of, in your opinion, and I'd like to hear from all three of you, what did you think of kind of the vision that Google kind of iterated at I/O, which was very much like we've moved past a mobile first world. We're now in an AI first world. First of all, do you think that's in a sense true? And if so, like, what was your take on that?
I think for me, to keep it as succinct as possible, Google sees its future as being a mixed reality company as well as an AI company. Those are the two major takeaways, like the two things that the massive impression that they left from the keynote on me anyways.
It's very clear that AI is hugely important to them. It's been clear just last week at Microsoft Build conference that AI is really important to Microsoft. It's a sort of the thing that everybody is fighting towards right now. And they had some of those, you know, that was one of the few things that they did announce new for Android O. A lot of the stuff that they showed were things that we already knew about, but there was also TensorFlow Lite, which is like a mobile version of TensorFlow, which is their open source library of machine learning, just to make it more accessible to mobile and to open that up. And I think that with AI, it's really important that open source mentality continues, and that
why do you say that?
So that everybody, like much like net neutrality, everybody is on even ground when it comes to the machine learning and the neural networks that they can play with and work with, and all of the massive amounts of data that you need to train a neural network is accessible to all. Because otherwise, then we will see just these huge companies just sort of dominating in a maybe scary way.
Right. Before letting you speak, Brad, I just wanted to add to that. Like, I think it's also important from kind of a standpoint of like an AI is not by its very nature neutral, right? Like it is very much a product of the person who helped build it, right? And I think it's important to open source that so different people are building these AIs so that it's not just, you know, Silicon Valley guys.
Are you describing Tay?
Yes, I am.
Okay, I just wanted to check.
Brad, sorry, I didn't let you do.
Oh, no problem. Yeah, well, I think back to, I think it was last week or the week before, not to shamelessly self-promote, but I did a story on how Canadians, the majority of them don't really know what AI is. And I'm sure that's true for other countries as well. So I think the idea that it was very AI focused, and rather than kind of swamping you with all this technical jargon, they kind of showed you in small cases and then larger ones as well, how the AI can help, like in cases like the guy had pictures with his daughters and sent that to his wife, and how the AI, all the tech there would read and figure out which of the two that the wife would want to see, for example. So I think showing examples like that of how AI works in applications like that is a good thing.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
To kind of spread the word for what AI really is, because a lot of people, again, don't really seem to be fully aware of what it actually is.
And a follow-up question for you, Rose. Obviously, you were at Build for Us. We talked with you over Skype last week.
That's right, live from the scene.
Live from the scene. So of the two companies, you've seen now Google, both Google and Microsoft declared their positions on AI. Which of the two do you think is better positioned to kind of lead in what is the next, I guess, technological revolution?
I think Google has a strong head start. And it just has access to more data, more information, and more parts of their customers' lives. The products are sort of more far-reaching, and Microsoft just has, you know, mostly has its hooks into enterprise. And so they are able to collect data through that, but not through people's personal lives as much anyway. And I know Microsoft, when I was speaking with one person from Microsoft, they were saying that was, you know, that was what was going to keep them honest. And since they also don't have any strong advertising business as strong as Google's is, that would also put them in a position to be have more integrity. But I think Google has a much stronger head start and probably will lead in the technology respect.
Right. So interestingly, and leading this into a question for Pat, you know, we saw Google announce Assistant for iOS, but we also saw Microsoft, you know, they're kind of the pitch that they ended Build with was that, you know, we'll play nice with all your devices, specifically the iPhone. And that's now interesting. Leading into WWC, Pat, which you're going to be covering for us, What do you see as Apple's kind of position in this AI space now, when clearly its two main competitors are like, it seems they're doing this in part because Apple doesn't have a position, or at least a very weak one.
Yeah, I mean, last year they opened Siri up to the third-party app developers to sort of try to expand what Siri's capable of doing. Mm-hmm. I still think Siri's a little bit behind Google Assistant, even Alexa. I've never actually used Cortana very much, so I don't know much about what Cortana is capable of. Mm-hmm. But I expect Apple to sort of continue on the same path as last year's WWDC when I was covering it. I do think we'll see a standalone Siri device of some sort, similar to Google Home. I don't know what it's going to look like, or if the focus is going to be more on the voice-activated assistant side of Siri, or if they're going to try to go the Alexa Amazon Echo route, where it's going to be the center of your the center of your like IoT internet connected home. But I definitely do see, I do think that Apple started down this AI route just like its competitors. Maybe not as strongly. It's still focused very much on devices, because that's where it makes its money. Mm-hmm. But I do see this pivot within Apple as well towards AI and voice activated assistants.
And you don't think that there's any indication with them sort of opening the walled garden a little bit that they are doubting their ability to get there?
Doubting it? I think there's been a massive shift in Apple, the way that Apple operates over the last couple of years. I don't know if it's doubt or them just realizing that having a completely walled off garden maybe doesn't always yield the best results. Maybe putting the occasional crack in that walled off garden helps innovation and helps them create things. Because I think for Siri, for instance, was ahead of like everything that was out at the time. Mm-hmm. And then everybody else caught up with it, right?
Well, yeah. And I mean, especially for AI, having an openness is so important. And that's why Amazon Alexa is so popular. Yeah. It's because of the skills, because it's open to third-party developers.
So I guess you're right. Yeah, I think that was definitely the case. Apple kind of realized, I probably even wrote about this at some point, Apple realized that they needed help to make Siri be more competitive again.
Well, what's interesting, I think, about Siri now that I look back at it is that typically, you know, the kind of the thorough line that you see with Apple is that they're last of the party, right? But the one to kind of run away with all the cake.
Yeah, every time.
Every time. But with Siri, they were the first to the party in some ways, right?
Yeah, that's true.
And
they got no cake.
And they got no cake because everyone's done it since better. Right?
The cake is also a lie.
It usually is.
They have a storied history of, like, there's so many examples of it. I won't even go through them, of them buying a small startup that's doing something cool and then taking that idea, sort of adding it to one of their products, putting their own little spin on it, adding this like Apple polish and sheen, and then sort of to an extent pretending that it was an original idea. And I think that's what pisses a lot of people off. But often what Apple does with these things is they do genuinely make them better.
Right. And in the instance of Siri, it was developed by Nuance, which is a Toronto-based company, or at
Siri's,
least Canadian.
Siri's the best example.
Yeah. So we haven't talked about too much about Android O. So the first thing I want everyone's opinion on is, and starting with you, Brad, the blob is dead.
It's a tragedy.
If you don't know, Google reportedly spent 18 months redesigning its emojis.
Actually 18 months?
18
really?
Months, yes, 18 months.
How do you get a job as like the person at Google that redesigns emojis?
I don't know. Maybe that's a feature that, you know, that will win you the Pulitzer in technology.
Oh, man, I'm going to write that.
Write it.
Yeah, so... yay or nay, are you sad for the death of the blob, Brad?
In all honesty, I'm not really sad.
That's the wrong answer, but it's okay.
I was explaining to Dean yesterday what the blob emojis were because he had never heard that term before.
Yeah, the term is a little confusing. It means rather than the face, like when
the
you're
circular.
On the circular face of a smiley that you might see on iOS, you're seeing these kind of blobular figures with like the faces, but sometimes they also have arms and they're just little blob dudes.
I will note that when I told Dean what they were, he was devastated. There's like one single tear came out of his eye.
I would just like to say that I'm not just sad, I'm furious. And
I thought the blob emoji were so like lovable in their derpiness.
So cute. And I really hoped that everybody, I wish that everybody could see what I see when I use my blob emojis. And now that is, you know, further from, it's a dead dream. That's never going to happen. It's only these sort of ugly little smiley faces. I just want a world where everything is more cute, not less cute. So I'm super angry about it, to be honest.
Overall, though, what were your takes on kind of the Android announcements? I know a lot of it is stuff that we kind of heard of before, right? Like, the one kind of interesting thing that stood out to me was they said, you know, Android's going to be faster now, or the boot time anyways, the app performance will be better.
Yeah, which is something that they often promise for a new version. But, you know, it is like they had a big focus on vitals. This is going to work better than it has before. It's going to be more energy efficient. We're not the apps running in the background, which is an issue with Android for sure. Will be, you know, that will make sure that they don't drain battery in the background when they're not being used. That kind of good stuff is really, really welcome. And I've seen other tech journalists say, if this is just an iterative update, but it makes my Pixel work way better, then I'll be happy. So I totally agree. Other than that, there was that focus on AI through the new TensorFlow Lite, and I think that's something we'll see in the background. And then just a bunch of things that we'd already seen, like notification badges and and like, you know, just kind of the smaller things. It's not a big update. You know, I doubt that we'll see many more big features come out before it's released, but
it looks so nice. I guess the question, and it'd be great if everyone contributed, was, you know, where does Android go from here?
In terms of the operating system itself?
Does it magically fuse with another operating system and get called after a color? I don't know.
Yes, it could become fuchsia. I mean, I think I would like to see more of a cross-platform focus for Android in the future, for sure. Like, I think that's the way that everything is heading towards, is it's not just going to be on the mobile phone. You know, people want to use the same apps across all of their different devices. So I could see that, and I would like to see that.
It's going
to
turn into a desktop operating system.
Okay.
I don't know. I think...
Where would you like to see it specifically, right, to kind of make it less abstract?
I think Android's reached a level of maturity now. I think if you put Android toe-to-toe with iOS, they're pretty comparable platforms with pretty comparable features as well. There's obviously stark differences in some respects, especially the closed garden, open zoo nature of Android to a certain extent.
Open zoo, I like that.
But I guess what I would like to see is Android becoming a little more stable, because I think that's one of the things that kind of separates Android from iOS. Though the last few iOS updates have been a little bit of a mess as well. But generally, I find iOS a slightly more stable platform than Android.
I agree, but I think that's part of the open zoo thing. If you want like new changes and you want it to be dynamic, it's very hard to make it a stable.
I want everything, and I want them to just make it happen.
Yeah, that's fair.
Brad?
I think, yeah, kind of what Rose was saying, looking at Android as a larger platform, not just on mobile, kind of taking that, but Microsoft always likes to say the two-in-one approach, and just kind of applying Android to different platforms, I think would be really cool to see.
So shout-out, starting with you, Brad.
I will give a shout-out to Injustice 2. I've been playing that quite a bit. Really love the first game. It's nice to see something DC related that's actually well told, unlike their movies.
Whoa. Sick burn.
Sick burns.
I saw that you were hanging out with Ed Boon too.
Yeah, nice guy. He likes coming to Toronto apparently, so it's pretty cool.
Cool.
I guess my shout out is, I mean, we're always talking about consumer technology, And we probably don't think of it, but we actually have a privilege in being able to use a lot of this consumer technology because we have the use of our our bodies and our hands to use touch screens. And that's not the same for everybody. Mm-hmm. So I was just writing about Tekla, which is a Toronto-based company, that they've made a device that sort of bridges that divide between the differently abled user in their touchscreen, and now they've just come out with a second version that also helps that user connect to all of these different smart home devices, which is obviously amazing if you're in a wheelchair and otherwise you wouldn't be able to access that technology because, you know, this digital world should be putting everybody on a more even footing. So I just want to shout out to Tekla.
Love it. What's on the Switch Hour Switch Minute?
You knew exactly what I was going to talk about. In this edition of Patrick talking about something related to the Nintendo Switch today, or actually, I guess it was last night during the Nintendo Direct that I didn't watch because I was too tired from IO. Nintendo revealed that there will soon be pink and green Switch controllers, but not just pink and green, neon pink and green.
Ooh,
which,
I love it.
Which I'm pretty hyped about. I would totally pick these up because I think they look pretty cool. But we need to create a change.org because unfortunately they're only going to launch in Europe and Japan. And this is an egregious problem. And I think that it needs to change very soon.
Come on, Nintendo.
So
Canada.
I want everybody, all of our listeners, to tweet Nintendo of Canada and say that you want the neon pink and green Switch controllers.
Yeah, they are gorgeous.
This is an important cause. That you need to support.
The Joy-Con and the Pro Controller.
Yeah, and the Pro Controller. Sorry, good. I'm glad Brad's here to correct my error. There's the Joy-Cons as well as the Pro Controller, which is one of my favorite controllers ever released for a video game console.
My shout-out goes to Chris Cornell, who I found out, sadly, this morning passed away. One of the first concerts I went with one of my best friends at the time was an Audioslave concert. This was back in, 2006. And I remember just being in the ACC and just the whole experience of it being overwhelming. And I had listened to, obviously Chris Cornell when he was with Soundgarden. I mean, not at the time because I was way too young. But it was, one of the, along with Kurt Cobain, kind of the two artists that I really loved when I was a teenager. And so when to find out that he had passed away way too young, was just really tough.
Great,
so rest
musician.
In peace. Yeah.
Yeah.
But on that note, let's keep it positive. It is the long weekend. So I hope you and yours really enjoy and have a great long weekend, whatever you're doing in whatever part of the country. And again, thank you so much for listening. We really appreciate it. Rose, where can people find us?
They can find us at Mobile Syrup on YouTube and at Mobile Syrup on Twitter and at Mobile Syrup on Instagram. And probably some other platforms that I'm not thinking of as well.
Pat, where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter at @Patrick_O'Rourke. And I'm going to spell my last name this week just to make sure. So it's O-R-O-U-R-K-E.
Oh, yeah. Also, my personal Twitter is @RoseBahar.
My personal Twitter is @BradShankar.
My personal Twitter is @IgorBonifacic, and that's IgorBonifacic.
You have a last name that's hard to spell, too.
Yeah, really, really hard.
I didn't think of that. No. Igor, I'm looking through you at Igor.
Yeah, I'm kind of in the way of him. I realize that.
I wish we had video this week so that you could see our interesting setup this week.
It's a fun one.
It's like we're at a deli counter.
Yeah.
Now I'm hungry.
On that note, please enjoy your deli and your long weekend. Have a good one, everyone.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.